The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmage, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 113.
PP.
Papa.
That's right. The letters.
For those of you who need to
Papa
know that.
Papa's right? Not the.
Yes, it is.
Papa
phonetic
is.
Phonetic alphabet, Papa.
No. I'm Googling that
$5
right now.
$5. You're
no,
talking to an
I'm not
Air Force
that, I am not that confident.
You're talking to an
and you're also an air traffic controller.
Exactly.
So I am not that confident, but I don't think it's Papa.
You will lose that bet. Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta,
yeah,
Echo,
what's that
Fox,
called?
Trot,
it's not
Golf,
the phonetic
Hotel,
alphabet.
India. I don't think we want to tell the reader or our listeners all that whole thing. But Matt's going to go Google it while we catch up, Tony.
All right. So what does PP mean, Mary?
Papa, Papa.
No. Why are we naming the show PP?
Well, we didn't want to put in Pooping Penguin because I brought in this little penguin toy that has these little candies. You wind it up and it waddles around and drops these candies out, which is pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. So. Why don't you hold it up for the camera?
Yeah, I will. So I'll do that. I'm not going to run it, but I'll hold
friends.
It up. He's got a little tuft of hair at the top. It looks like a little mini mohawk. And you turn him around, and you can see that there's a little spot here where the candies drop out. And it garnered quite a laugh when I turned it on this morning.
Yeah, it's pretty
he just
funny.
Walks and drops.
Yeah, I can't find
drops.
It.
You can't find it. Well, anyway, so I'm going to talk about what I did while I Google for it, and I'll have it probably.
I found it.
Well, I can't find it. I'm thinking, I found that because you find some of the craziest things on the web that you couldn't find the phonetic alphabet. So what is the letter?
I'd take the Fifth Amendment.
I knew I'd win.
I have the right to remain silent, and I'm going to exercise it.
All right. But anyway, got a new Christmas tree up, and
cool.
It's a real tree.
Does it look like mine?
No, the Jack Daniels tree.
Yeah.
No, did you see my little note?
Yeah.
You got it on the store yet? No, I went out to my sister and brother-in-law's, and they live on 24 acres, and they just says, "Hey, you want a tree?" So I have this tree. It's not like the trees you get at the tree lots where they're nicely shaped and everything. I've got a little hole here.
Yeah, because
so
they don't grow that way.
No,
that
they
takes
don't.
Years and years of shearing. I know. That was the first job I ever had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, so that's what I did. And I'm also getting more familiar with the Zettabyte file system. Learning some tutorials. I just really want to get to know it better so I can really take advantage of it. So.
You know, speaking of Christmas trees, my parents, they always have real trees. They've never gotten the fake ones.
Yeah.
And for 5 years straight, my dad would just go out to the backyard, and we had these Christmas or these pine trees that were like 15, 20 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd reach up as high as he could reach and cut
the top off.
And cut the top off, and then that would be their Christmas tree for the year.
So then after a few years, you had these sheared top trees, right?
Well, no, and then in the spring, he'd go through and then cut the tree down.
Oh, okay.
The rest of it down. And
okay.
Then they'd have some firewood for the bonfire. But
after it dried?
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny.
But yeah, that was funny.
All right, so Matt.
Yeah?
How you doing? How are things at the data center?
Things at the data center were good. No freaking outrageous problems last night. It was great. It was a smooth, smooth night.
Yeah.
You know, there was the typical quarter after three where the backups crash into the MySQL dumps that crash into the log rotate.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Got to time those a little better.
No, I have a few. There's one cluster and one, two, three servers that habitually go down.
Mm.
And the server themselves don't go down, but HTTPD...
Processes on the servers go
down. HTTPD
gotcha.
Doesn't restart like it's supposed to.
Oh, okay.
And some of them, you log in and you'll do a service HTTPD status, and it says it's running, but it's not serving any web pages. So you have to tell it to restart. And other ones just says, it's not running.
Oh, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
But tell us share with us
Yeah, you're known for something over there, aren't you?
What?
Share with us the little story.
No.
I'm going to tell then. Well, what? I'm not going to tell the story because I know you're going to jump in and finish it for me. But those of you who are watching on the Hangout, obviously we all have our little baseball hats on. But today, coincidentally, two of us have BSD-related hats. And Tony has our FMLR hat.
Yeah.
And then when I was noticing that, Matt then shared a little tidbit with us as far as his perceived expertise at work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I got known as the go-to guy for BSD because I wear a BSD hat.
But this is for hat selection.
Exactly.
That's right. I remember when you got that at Ohio Linux Fest a couple years ago, I think.
Maybe
2 or 3 years ago?
2 years ago.
Yeah, yep. I remember that because they were out. When I went there, they were gone. So I had to buy my PC BSD hat, which I had no problem doing, of course, because it goes for good.
I don't know. I gave them a $20 donation. They gave me a hat.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's nice.
Yeah, that's
reasonable. For a good cause. It's for a good cause. So, all right.
Cool. Well, this week I've been doing, we got the rest of the cables and stuff in, so we have the full mixer set up that how I want it to go, which is two mixers.
So it's probably sounding fantastic, although we don't know yet because we haven't heard the recording.
Right. No, I mean, actually, it's not really a sound difference in the recording. It's going to be whether we can do a Hangout or not and have the Hangout record in also.
Okay.
So we have, it gives a separation between the two, so we can have that one go out to the Hangout and then have the Hangout come back to the recording.
Okay.
Or for us to be able to hear the Hangout also.
Sure.
And thus, it prompted me to start scheduling Hangouts and interviews.
Yeah, I saw you. I saw the activity, the email activity, and I thought, wow, there was, I won't tip your hand if we're not ready to do that yet, but I did see a lot of the email activity about setting up some interviews. I think that's going to be very nice, and I think if we have, you know, one once a month or something like that, I think it makes for an interesting show.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. So we've got two in the works right now. And once we have everything confirmed and ready to go, then we will announce those. But yeah, so it's going to be exciting new things coming.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
All right.
All right.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
Normally we do the developer quote at the end of the kernel news, but I don't have a developer quote. I have a little bit of an announcement.
Is it good or bad news?
It's
just news.
Indifferent, yes.
Okay, it's just news. Okay.
It's due to our record schedule, we missed an RC release in 4 stable kernels, including this announcement.
So you've got a 10-minute update? Is that what you're
No. I'm not going to do the missed RCs and the missed stable updates, but this announcement's important. There will be no more updates for the 3.11.x series kernel. Users of the 3.11.x series kernel should move to the 3.12.x kernel.
Okay. Good.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. So on Friday, December 2013, at 9:58 Pacific Standard Time, Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.13.RC3, and here's what he had to say about it. I'm still on a Friday release schedule, although I hope that changes soon. The reason I didn't drag this one out to Sunday is that it's already big enough and I'll wait until things start calming down, which they really should at this point, hint, hint. I'll start shouting at people for sending me stuff that isn't appropriate as we're starting to get later into the release candidates. That said, it's not like RC3 is somehow unmanageably large or that anything particularly scary has happened. I'd have liked for it to be smaller, but I always do, and nothing particularly nasty stands out here. The bulk here is drivers, net, SCSI, sound, crypto, and ARM DT stuff, but there's the usual random sick stuff too, with architectural updates, PA RISC, more ARM, x86, and some file system networking updates. Go wild, Linus Torvalds.
He tends to sign off with something like that. Yes. Go wild.
So the main line is 3.13-RC3, and our stable updates. On Wednesday, the 4th of December, 2013, at 11:52 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Grohartman released kernel 3.4.72 with 62 files changed, 362 lines inserted, 167 lines deleted. Also on Wednesday, the 4th of December, 2013, at 11:52 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Grohartman released kernel 3.10.22 with 205 files changed, 2128 lines inserted, 770 lines deleted. And then again on Wednesday, the 4th of December, 2013, at 11:53 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Grohartman released kernel 3.12.3 with 235 files changed, 2,425 lines inserted, and I forgot to put in the number of lines deleted. It's a blank.
Some lines were deleted.
Some lines were deleted. So, and that's the kernel news.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt.
Yes, Matt. Thank you very much for sharing.
You're welcome.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, so I guess we'll start off with Deepin. It's
an Ubuntu base.
Are you sure?
I am sure.
Yeah, which the full name, it's Linux Deepin. It's,
I remember kind of seeing it.
Yeah, Linux Deepin.
2013. And like Mary said, it's Ubuntu based.
Mm-hmm.
And it's developed for China, or in China.
In China, for China. But you can install with the English, with the English language version intact. And I tell you, Deepin is kind of, I consider it a very interesting distro because it is extremely user-friendly. As a matter of fact, this particular release ships with something they call the Deepin Terminal. They got to come up with a different name. But it's shipped as a default terminal emulator for this particular release. And some of the features that are included with it include vertical and horizontal split, workspace switching, SSH connection tool, font resizing, and, Matt, something you're always interested in, background transparency with adjustments. And they've got...
The last time they had a release, though, it says was on 8.7.
Mm-hmm. I think I reviewed it then.
We've talked about Deepin, though, sooner than 8.7.
No.
More recently.
I don't think so.
If we did, it was in that conversation with what's Ubuntu-based.
Yeah.
And Chinese stuff.
Yeah. So, you're going to have to listen.
I'm not convinced.
All right. Well, I would grab yourself an instance of...
The cake is a lie.
I would grab yourself an instance of VLC about 5 hours and start listening because we have not talked about it in any instance since then. And if Tony and I are on the same side of the argument, I'm thinking we're probably right.
Yeah, 5 hours, but that was, what, 3 months ago that Matt's trying to go back to? And that would be 12 episodes, which times about 2 hours each. So you're looking at 24 hours of listening pleasures.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll move on. I got a couple more things to say about Deepin.
Okay.
In this particular release, you can choose to log in using face recognition.
Ooh.
And your facial features are sent directly to the Chinese government. I'm kidding, but this is kind of an effort on their part to kind of move in the direction of more intelligent and user-oriented basically operating systems. So that's something they've put into this. And they also they've also made another adjustment as far as removable devices when you plug them into your system. Now if you drag files from the removable device, rather than, I think in previous versions, it basically moved it, which may not be what you want it to do, but now it's going to just simply copy it unless you specify that you want it moved. So another thing, too, that they've put in place here, and I don't mean to run on about Deepin, but it, you know, again,
but
it's
you are.
But I
will.
Okay. I don't know if you've ever watched a movie, and, you know.
No, I've never watched a movie my entire 48 years of existence.
All right.
I have never seen a movie.
Okay. Well, man, I think you should try it. If you had let me finish my sentence. If you've
kind
never watched...
Pause there. I thought it was over, but all right.
All right. Well, I had to breathe. But anyway, if you've never watched a movie on your laptop,
I've never watched a movie on my laptop. That is amazing. You can watch a movie on your laptop?
Yeah, you can.
All right.
I'm going to keep going. But you know how after a while, sometimes a screensaver will switch on?
Not if you have it turned off.
Well, here's the thing. But they've done it even better because you can still have your screensaver working, but they've improved the power management. When you're watching videos in your web browser, your system won't be detected as idle. So the display won't be turned off and the system won't sleep automatically, which they say then allows you to focus on your video. So that's a nice other feature that they've got. And they've also taken that Windows key. I'm almost doing a review, aren't I? they've taken the window key and they've changed that default so that it brings up the launcher. Because like right now, you know, here in PCBSD, I can hit it. Well, it's got a little Ubuntu sticker over it. Thanks.
No, I thought in KDE
it's not a sticker. Is that a sticker or is that
it's a sticker.
An actual key?
It's a sticker. I can feel the raised edge.
The way KDE does the key mapping, it doesn't. You can't get the Windows key to come up.
You can't in KDE.
You cannot.
You could.
Right? Is that what you said? You have to do a combination of that key plus another.
Right.
There is a customization area where you can probably do that.
Well, when I was running KDE, I tried that and I couldn't get it to work.
No, so what you
I
have to do it with another key, like Alt and the Windows key.
Oh,
you no, not even Alt, because those are what are the meta keys. You have to do the super plus Z or plus A or plus something else. So that's what I did. I did super and Z. So I just hit it with my pinky. You can hit them both at the same time. And then, just like right now, I hit it with my pinky, and it brings up the menu for in Cinnamon. So any of the GNOME base, you can hit, you just, they map it that way.
Sounds busy. but anyway, so, and then the only other thing I was going to mention, too, is they had a bug in the previous release that, and I think I may have commented on this or something in my review, that Bluetooth could not be disabled, so they've got that fixed in this release.
All right.
And then their battery icon always showed charging. They've got that fixed.
That's good.
Yeah. So anyway.
But what's an icon?
See, that's why I wanted you to go. Yeah. What's an icon among friends? That's why I wanted you to go back to Deepin, because I went and did a bunch of research on it. And I didn't want it to go to waste. So, all right, Tony.
All right.
Back to you.
All right. Well, the next one is also on the 28th is Makulu. Linux?
Oh, yeah.
4.3.
Hakuna Makulu.
Yeah, it's Debian-based and running XFCE. And their icon is a little pig
hippo.
Or hippo.
Hippo.
Is it hippo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That little hippo-like pig.
That hippo-like pig.
It looks... although the song you were just singing was sung by a pig, so that's why I was thinking...
Yeah, but it wasn't the actual song. I was making a play on words on the song.
But the key question is, what does the hippo say? I'll tell you what the hippo says. It says, I got 33 themes, 122 window borders, 122 controls, 15 icon sets, 39 cursors, 34 wallpapers. Allowing users complete flexibility and freedom as to change the look as they please. So that's what Makulu Linux has in this release. And they also have got a new installer, I guess, or they've made some adjustments to the installer in this new version. So, and I think that was due to some contributions or at least some help from the Refracta team. So,
yeah.
Anybody who's going to give Makulu, maybe I should review it. I don't think I have. Anybody who's going to try that out can take note of a nice new installer.
Yeah, so. That's pretty cool. You know, I was wondering, Makulu, looking at that, looks like a Hawaiian kind of word or name.
Yeah.
But when I look, it's their origins is actually from South Africa.
Okay.
So, all right. Next up, we have Peppermint OS 4, 2013-1113. Actually, the dash is in the wrong place, but anyway, which is a lightweight Ubuntu-based distro with OpenBox. And Peppermint also wasn't their big thing about running a lot of things online. And so instead of having an Office suite, they say they have links to Google Docs and things like that, right? So it was because I tried it out a couple years ago, and it was
did you?
Yeah. And it seemed to be like the precursor to Chrome OS, kind of. where it was Linux, but it was all web-based stuff.
I,
is that what you guys found out?
Is that what we found, or did we find out something different? No, I don't, excuse me, I don't really know because I haven't tried Peppermint Linux. But they just indicated in this particular release that they've got better file system support because apparently Peppermint 4 really didn't like certain file systems that were included in the installers. So in this particular release, they've made sure that the proper support is there. So that's always helpful. And they fixed some typo. They had a typographical error. And I saw, where did I see that? Oh, on the distro I'm reviewing this week, they had a typographical error. It's separate or separate where there's that E versus A. That's what they did. So anyway, but
I think it was ice when I tried it out. Peppermint ice.
Peppermint ice, okay.
Yeah, and then the reason it's 4 is because this is the 4th main release, which the this is the updated version where Peppermint 4 first came out in was 6, what is that, July?
June.
Or June, you're right.
Yeah, and that's why they had to put this out because of that issue with the file, you know, certain file systems that were included that apparently they'd had to tweak and take care of. So I guess they've done that. Yeah. So, okay.
All right. Next up we have Centric.
Yeah.
Is it? All right. Centric
plus 1204. One for you.
Thank you. 1204.3, which is a Ubuntu-based distro with the XFCE as the desktop, which includes the 4.11 versions of XFWM4 and XFCE4.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they they've included, at least with this release, a short video overview of some of the new features. So that's kind of nice. You get a chance to preview them and decide whether you want to give Centric a try.
That is nice.
Yeah.
And in the name, 1204 indicates that it's off of the LTS of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
So they're on, it's more of a stable platform, running a few years old at this point, but it's still very stable.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we have TinyCore Linux 5.1, which was released on the 30th. And TinyCore is
tiny. 12
right.
Megabytes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
I tried to use it once to build an appliance, and I couldn't get it to do what I needed it to do. I had to give it up.
Well, actually, and it's kind of coincidental that TinyCore is on here, or on this week, because my review is of Nano Linux, which is kind of a cousin, because it's about the same size, so I'll be talking about that in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I did a TinyCore review, and it was tiny. So.
And doesn't the base, it includes FLWM? Is that Flux? Fluxbox? Is that FLWM? Is that what that is? Or?
I think
know.
So.
Is it the SLWM or FL?
FLWM.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's the 14 meg version, right? Is that what you were referring to?
Not my review is of the 12, but it's and it uses SLWM, which is the slim window manager. Everything's very lightweight. We should be doing that, you know, in keeping with our approach to New Year's with New Year's resolutions.
Going
so
slim.
I'm thinking slim. So all right.
So, next up is near and dear to my heart is Mint Linux 16. Or Linux Mint 16, and that was released on the 30th. This version comes with Cinnamon 2.0, and it says there's 856 commits from 28 developers.
What do you got to say about that, Matt?
Gotta love the minty goodness.
Okay, that's there right. We go. All right.
So I went ahead and I did the upgrade.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I upgraded this week.
Okay.
And instead of doing what they suggest is to wipe and reinstall. I just did a package update. And there was...
Yeah, disk upgrade?
Yeah. Yeah, so what you do
how'd
is
it work out?
An apt, Mm-hmm. It was actually really nice.
I used Debian-based distros, I always upgraded via dist upgrade.
When's the last time you used a Debian-based distro?
It's been a little over a year now.
There was an easy sed command that went through and went through all the app files and updated to the newer version of what it needed to be, so I didn't have to go in and manually enter everything.
Mm-hmm. I thought dist upgrade did. No. You've got to change the repositories, then do the dist upgrade.
Yep. So I went through and did that, and then I tried downloading the packages while I was not at home. I was somewhere else, and it kept on hanging about halfway through.
Oh.
So I tried it like four times, and it wouldn't go. So I finally got home, mm-hmm. and I ran it, and it took a long time. It probably 4 or 5 hours.
Wow.
Which at that point I could have
downloaded the ISO.
Yeah, downloaded it, wiped it, reinstalled, put my stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, I was able to let it go. I was able to do other things, you know, play with my kids. So I wasn't sitting on my computer the whole time.
Your kids appreciated that, I'm sure.
I do agree. they did appreciate it.
Yeah.
But one reboot, everything was installed. I didn't have to go in and fix anything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it worked great.
Well, see, that's the nice thing about upgrading versus wiping and installing, because, if you've installed a lot of programs, you know, just separately after the initial install, then you've got to go back and put those in place. I mean, you'll still have your settings because those config files are maintained in your home directory. But the nice thing about a new install is that you kind of clean up if there's any stuff sitting around in there.
Get rid of all the cruft.
Clean it up. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I take that back.
And the kerfluffle.
There was one thing that I had to fix, and mm-hmm. that was the theme for the login manager didn't transfer over right. MDM didn't run at all.
Oh, okay.
So I had to drop down a command line, log in, and then a run X. And then once I ran X, everything came up fine. And then I just
then
went through
and
I changed
and
the theme. And then I was able to log in fine.
That's the beauty of familiarity with the command line is that you know you can, and 6 or 7 years ago, if I would have encountered that, I would have freaked out and just installed new because, you know, I didn't know any better at the time, but now you can just log in and fix it.
Yep. Right. As long as it boots to some prompt.
Yep. You can.
I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. And that's where, I think a newbie would have gotten hung up and mm-hmm. would have thrown up their hands.
It would have been a negative experience for them, too.
Exactly.
So, okay.
Anyway, I'm going to put that sed command, I'm going to put that in the show notes of my upgrade. And then we're going to continue on. But I have that right now, so I'm just going to stick that in real quick. Hold on.
Okay. That sounds good. Because we only have a few more left, I think, don't we?
Yeah, 5, 6, 12.
But we'll make it interesting. Let's see, we got peppermint, tiny core mint.
Yeah, mint. Next up, we have Oracle Linux 6.5.
Ooh, hiss.
Which is based on Red Hat. It's Red Hat 6.5, which was recently released.
Mm-hmm.
And we always look forward to all the Red Hat copies.
Clones.
What would you call it?
Clones.
Clones. That's yeah.
Right.
I think
Bring on the clones.
Yeah, send in the clones.
Send in the clones. Send in the clones.
Yeah, that's what the Register had as their title for, you know, Oracle and CentOS and all of those
Scientific.
Guys. Yep.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, and CentOS 6.5 is the next one. On the 1st also, December 1st. Again, a clone of Red Hat.
Mm-hmm. But a classy clone, because they update the documentation, don't they?
Yes, they
and
do.
Remove the Red Hat.
And they, so. Yes, they do.
So we're calling them the classy clone.
Unlike Oracle.
The unclassy clone.
When you go to Oracle's documentation and say, oh, let me see that Oracle documentation. And it says, Red Hat.
Well, and probably the reason why they do that, aside from just not wanting to do it or being lazy, is that the sign of Red Hat brings a certain cachet to whatever it's attached to, in my opinion, because Red Hat is a very, you know, is a well-known company, well-established, very solid.
You're giving them too much credit because it's they're evil. There's no other way to say it. Mm-hmm. Oracle's just evil.
Yeah, the only reason I can think of why a company would go with them is if they already have Oracle as a vendor, and
it would just be another product they
They want to stick to one vendor. And so I have seen large corporations do that, where they drop
I told you, my
vendors.
Company standardized on Oracle Linux.
No, you didn't say that.
I just did. I saw it on a posting on our intranet, because I subscribe to the Linux one now, and I saw that, and I was disappointed, because I think they had used SUSE. So I'm thinking, well, maybe they're trying to just skinny it down so that they're using a single vendor or something.
Probably moving away from Novell.
Well, you guys use a lot of Oracle databases, don't you?
I think that we do. I don't know, because I'm not in that area. But yeah, they got that big data center.
Well, no, you work with the customers though, installing the.
Oh, but that's a little bit separate. That's our knowledge management product.
Right. Does that use an Oracle database? Or?
No, Microsoft SQL Server. Yep.
Oh, another wonderful piece of freaking software.
I know. Well, one time I thought, I was gonna just send them a list and say, okay, here's what we use now. Why don't we try this, so that we could put together a version that would be more open source.
MariaDB.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, but we're gonna move on because we got distros.
That's right. Next up we have is Kanima.
Kanima.
Kanima. Is that how you say it? C-A-N-A-I-M-A.
Kanima. Yeah. Yep, it's Venezuelan.
Genio Linux 4.0. Like Mary said, it's the government-sponsored Venezuelan distribution based on Debian. Code name, Carapicia? No. Carapacupa?
You're on your own for that one, Tony.
I don't know. Yeah, it's Kerepakupai.
Yes.
Exactly, yep. They're running GNOME 3.4 and the 3.2 Linux kernel with LibreOffice 4.0.
I think it's Kerepakupai, after the world's highest waterfall, as it says. But I was out at their site looking around, and they've got this banner, kind of where you'd have like a banner ad, but it's not an ad, but just a little memorial to... The recently deceased president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. And
don't get me started on Hugo Chavez. Oh, my God.
But anyway, it's their president, so, it's certainly their prerogative.
All right.
No comment.
Okay. We're moving on.
Next up we have is Dowdo Linux.
Dowdo. Yeah.
2.1. Which they're also Debian-based, and they're specially designed for children 12 and up.
Up to 12.
It does say that, Mary. Thank you.
Matt? Okay.
Yeah, Matt.
Whatever.
I changed my voice.
We're interchangeable. What?
almost. Although I have to laugh, when you posted in Google+ that little personality test.
Oh, yeah, we both landed in Florida,
which was hilarious.
I tried to run that, and I didn't get any, was it like 70 questions?
Yeah, something like that, probably.
Yeah, I ran that, and they didn't tell me any state.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. It took a long time for me to go through it, and then I was disappointed.
I didn't have 70 questions. I had a few.
Well, wait a minute. Did you? No.
The short one or the long one?
Did you use the one with the website, or did you use the one where I said this test is derived from this test?
Oh, it must have been the other one.
Because the one where, if you use the one where it said it was derived from this test, that's not going to tell you a state.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that must
try
have been
it again.
And it was a lot longer.
Because we figure if you get Florida too, then we're moving the show to Florida. Anyway, but back to Dowdo. They, as part of their changes, they added some recent printer drivers, and then also they've put as far as ad hoc Wi-Fi networks hotspots, they've added support for that, which kind of makes sense. You know, you want to have something that's sort of flexible that you can not set up on the fly, but that you can do. Well, you know, when you're working with kids, it just seems sensible to have something that's fairly flexible to kind of accommodate that. And then they also, let's see, they've got, they had an issue with administrative rights, which they fixed in this release, too. So
all right.
I was like, they're in good shape now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Got, and then the last one we have on the list is Rosa.
The lovely Rosa.
That's right, with 2012 art. To the desktop fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Although if it's, oh, it's the second release, right? R2, because usually isn't, maybe it's RC2 is what I was thinking about.
Oh, art release candidate
yeah.
2?
But R2, yep. And they are.
Release 2, yeah.
They are a KDE centric desktop.
They are.
Yeah, and they have a very nice icon set that you can download and run in other distros also, right?
Yep. And I used to run that until I started running the Faenza set, which has got kind of a, it's sort of got a Mac look to the icons that I now run. Another thing too that they've got available or that they've put into this particular release is base EFI support. That was added to the installer. So now users can install the system into EFI computers using Grub2 and the EFI Boot Manager. And also Grub2 in EFI mode is now able to detect and boot Windows installations. So they've been doing some work on that too in order to make Rosa kind of fit into that scheme. You know, once Microsoft's kind of screwed that whole thing up, in my opinion, they're working to make it easier anyway. And one other nice thing that they've done is they have improved the ButterFS support.
So all right.
They didn't. There wasn't. I didn't really have a chance to go into find the details of what they did there, but nice to hear because I kind of liked ButterFS when I was using it. So
very cool.
All right.
And you know, I'm reading right now on there. It says the R lineup. Mm-hmm. Is for users who care for a fresh, updated version. So I think the R and then the number is just like their, kind of like their point releases.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Just their updated versions.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
So that's why it's Rosa 2012, because the main distro mm-hmm. was released last year.
Yeah.
And then these are the updates to that. So very cool.
Okay.
And then that's it. So we have a couple of developments, so we can look forward to Pingai, ZenWalk,
mm-hmm.
There's a FreeBSD, and
yeah, FreeBSD. FreeBSD, there, that release is, it's going to be a major release because that's going to be a 10, I think, when it comes out.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a 10 now, obviously, but it's FreeBSD 10.0, so it's a major one.
Yeah.
And you know,
there's a development release that's called Resca Tux? Resca, yeah, that's right, Resca Tux.
Uh-huh.
So that looks interesting. That's one of those Linux rescue DVD, CD kind of boot disks. So
yeah,
cool.
It's newer too, isn't it? I've never heard of Resca Tux before.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing it either. So.
Well, I mean, it could be new, or it could be something that changed its name, or it could be something that changed its logo.
Oh, you know, their website is... looks like it's part of the Super Grub.
Actually, it is fairly new because, let me just tell you, maybe it changed from that, but Resca Tux first hit the scene back in August with a development release. So that was Beta 4. This is Beta 5. I'm thinking once it goes production, it might be kind of fun to install Linux, break it, and then review this CD as part of a fixing thing. So I'll kind of put that on the list of things to do.
All right. Very cool.
Okay. So
all
now.
All right. So now we're looking at the top five for the week, right, Matt?
Yes, sir.
Did you turn your mic back on?
Yes, I did.
Excellent.
All right. All right. So at number five, we have CentOS with 1679.
And trending up.
And number four, we have Magia with 1694
and trending down.
In the number three spot we have Ubuntu with 1724
and trending up.
In the number two spot we have Manjaro with 2040 or I'm sorry, 2004.
Patting those numbers, Tony.
Trending down.
And in the number one spot, we have Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
Yeah, with 53.24.
And trending down.
Wow.
That's trending down, and they had a release. I think they're reaching the tipping point where they're going to be sliding.
No, never happened.
Well, you know, I think it's trending down because this was the last 7 days, and the release was 7 days ago. So they hit
hit their high, and then they're leveling back up.
Excuses. I'm trying to find
pretty high.
All right. Okay, that sounds reasonable. I'll accept that.
All right.
I'll accept that answer. What game show says that? I'll accept that answer.
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know either.
Doesn't Jeopardy do it from time to time?
I love Jeopardy. I win all the time.
Review the answer. Where they say they don't accept that answer?
Yeah, they do. That's sometimes a plural.
Because your pronunciation.
I didn't say that, Tony.
I would not survive on that game.
Yeah.
I'm a savant. I know a lot about certain things and not much about anything else. So, anyway. All right. Well, I think we've reached that time of the show where I take a look at a distro. I do.
All right.
And I kind of hinted at it a little bit earlier, and we talked about Tiny Core Linux. But Blink, and you'll miss this Linux distribution. That's because it is small, really small, 12.7 megabytes small. This week's review is of Nano Linux, and that's the end of my review. just kidding. But actually, Nano Linux is based on Microcore Linux and Tiny Core. It uses, one thing it does is it uses BusyBox. And, you know, whenever you've got a distro that's going to be, or I guess where your goal is to create a very small, compact distro, tool sets like BusyBox are the thing to use. Now, those of you who aren't familiar with BusyBox, actually, I'm only familiar with it when I run into problems. When I'm trying to do something, and then I drop to like a BusyBox prompt.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't, then, well, I'm in better shape now, but when I first started exploring, and I'd fall into that, I'd just think, oh, I'm toast, and then I'd start over. But anyway, it's really just a utility set that combines, smaller versions or tiny versions of many common, Unix utilities. And of course, in BusyBox, this almost sounds like a review of BusyBox, doesn't it? there are far fewer options, and that's just to keep it small, and that's why it works really well in Nano Linux. So, but it's a single small executable. Would I be living large at the end of this review, or would I be, or would I be thinking small? I guess let's find out. First, the vitals. A name, of course, is Nano Linux. The maintainer, it wasn't really clear to me who maintained it, so I'm just going to say the Nano Linux project, but I think it's someone named George. The distro's latest birthday, it was on November 28th, 2013, and it's a derivative of Microcore / I think Tiny Core. The kernel that's available in this particular release is kernel 3.0.21. And the review desktop, well, none, but it uses the Nano X Windows system. Uh-huh. And also it uses the Slim Window Manager. So kind of combined there, that's what really presents the graphical desktop. I'll call it a desktop, for lack of a better word.
That's interesting. I've never heard anybody talk about Slim Window Manager, so I'm interested in what you're going to talk about.
It's slim.
All right.
actually, I didn't really... let me just say this. Nano Linux starts at a boot prompt with the option for... there's actually three function keys available that you can select. And those... I pressed them all just to see what I had in it. They're just various sets of boot parameters that you can load at boot time. I opted not to use any of them, and I just decided to go with the defaults. Now, the second thing I noticed, aside from the fact that the distro is extremely small, is the fact that Nano Linux, it had an incredibly fast boot speed. Mm-hmm. I timed it. It took 8 seconds from the time it started booting to the time I had a graphical desktop.
Wow.
That's pretty fast. With icons. now, as I mentioned, Nano Linux uses the Nano X graphical interface instead of X11, and that, again, is to keep it small and keep it fast. And Matt, I think we had talked earlier, you were noticing when you did that process check that, wasn't it X was taking up a lot of process.
Oh, yeah. KDE, it was, it's consuming. Taken up about a third of my processing mm-hmm. power, and under LXDE, it doesn't take up hardly anything.
Wait, say again, what does it use? It doesn't use X.
It doesn't. What? It's called Nano X.
Oh, wow.
As kind of the underpinnings for it, and then it uses a Slim Window Manager, SLWM. So, did we really expect anything else? Because all of these are very compact, small programs and tools. So, I usually check what graphics and wireless modules are loaded into the kernel. Well, Nano Linux has no wireless module, and I, you know, wasn't surprised at that. But what I did do is I plugged in a network cable, and I was able to get out to the internet without any problem. But notice I said I'm able to get out to the internet without any problem. I will talk about that in a second. It had a kind of a bare bones video manager, and when I tried to run it in that little micro laptop I have, that Dell one that I talked about last week had the issues with the wireless, it had issues with video modes. So it was an unrecognized one. I tried to pass it a few. It just didn't seem to work very well. Huh. So I ended up running it on my big laptop, and that was fine. So anyway, but let's talk a little bit about the defaults. The browser is, no surprise, Dillo. Now, Dillo certainly presents the web page, but it doesn't handle certain HTML renderings very well. Oh, so yeah. You get your information, but it may not be arranged in a way that you're used to seeing if you're running, say, Opera or Firefox or Chrome or Reconc. The Office Suite, now, it's got something called Spreadsheet, and it's got something called FI Writer. So I opened them both up, and they seem to work. I really didn't have a chance to do anything much with them, but they're both installed and are available on the desktop. There was no mail client that I could find, and the file manager is called the Fluff File Manager.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's called the Fluff File Manager. It's very compact. I did a little checking on it, and I've seen questions about it in other distros, people wanting to install it in those distros. I think Arch and Gentoo were two distros where I saw questions on their user forums about it. But it's also, I also checked, and it's the default in Tiny Core Linux, which is no surprise.
Right.
Now, the Nano Linux desktop contained a small grid of icons in the upper left corner. This was in lieu of a traditional menu launcher. Now, Nano Linux did have a start button, but the only thing that it contained were four options. There was a settings option, which when I checked, only had two things in it for the keyboard and the internet connection. There was also a search program files option, which when you checked it, opened up a search box. A run program options, which again opened up a search box for you to enter the program, and you got to get it exactly right or you're not going to start your program, as I found out. And then there's another one that just powers off the system. I had installed this to a CD, but certainly you can put it on a USB drive and run it from there, but you don't have any other options. It's just either on or off. And that's what it was. So those icons in the grid in the upper left portion of the desktop, basically are the menu system. And one other thing I noticed about it is using a USB mouse, wireless mouse, created some problems. I did a little researching on that, and it looks like, somebody else who had downloaded Nano Linux and attempted to use it found that the icons tended to stick to the cursor. So when I was trying to click them to start programs, they weren't starting. The icon would then click or stick to my cursor. I'd try to, you know, get it off. It's kind of like having a piece of gum on your, you know, on your shoe. You're trying to get it off, but you just can't. The interesting thing is when I used the touchpad and the buttons on the laptop, I had no problem starting programs or anything. So that just goes to show you some of the limitations of this distro.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the USB, its USB capability. So from that point on, I opted not to use my mouse and then just worked with the touchpad on the keyboard.
All right.
Let's see here. So, Nano Linux, you know, did not have an install method. It basically, you DD it over to a USB drive or run it off the CD. And the installed environment, well, there really isn't one other than what I just talked about. There were not a ton of interesting programs. These are very stripped down versions of programs. I mentioned the Fluff File Manager. There are a few other few other items there that weren't particularly interesting to me. My rating, Nano Linux is a pared down bare bones Linux distro. A little more, so than I prefer. Much like TinyCore, it contains the basics, but unlike TinyCore, Nano Linux lacks a user community, and that may be due to its relative newness or nanoness. There isn't anything that really distinguished it and distinguished Nano Linux from the other micro distros like TinyCore. So that makes me say, well, not much here for me, not something I would do. If I had to choose between them, I'd take TinyCore because it's got a community. And I think your questions could be answered a little more quickly. So I give it kind of a 1.8. I suspect that with a little more activity on this thing, it would be better, but it just didn't really rock my boat.
Well, it just seems like it's one of those distributions that you would use to build on, to build something else. It's not something you're going to run by itself.
I think you're right, Matt, because they talked about that this really contains kind of the core, the core system.
Yeah, TinyCore. TinyCore is meant to be used
very modular based
to build to build systems on top of.
Yes, and that's what when I did some checking, that's what I saw from that community is that there, and I think from my review too. I hope my mic is okay. all right, so. And that gentleman is, Matt, there's going to be a test.
I will fail. Mary had to nudge me awake towards the end of her review.
I wanted to prevent you from snoring. That's the only reason why.
I don't know how successful you were.
Well, it's when I started hearing the little noise over there. I thought, well, he's still breathing. It's starting to get heavy. Anyway, but welcome back, Matt. So anyway, everybody, that's my gig for this week, my review.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right, well, good, Matt.
I got that, well, that one story that we were both talking about earlier. Did you read that, Mary?
I only read the headline because I had just found it.
I read the whole thing while you were doing your review.
Oh, okay. And it puts you to sleep.
It refers to the fat file system and how a German court invalidated Microsoft's patent on FAT, and that's one of the things that they charge Android they charge Android royalties on it.
Yeah, and a lot of those little vendors pay up, you know, when the extortion man comes to the door. So, well, I think it's going to be interesting. That just posted in Softpedia, today, I think, yesterday or today?
Recently.
So if we were doing our show on Sunday morning, I'm sure we'd have a story about it.
Probably.
All right. Well, anyway, I've got just a couple of items.
You go to Softpedia, it's called Linus Torvalds Might Indirectly Cause Microsoft to Lose Millions. Because he helped invalidate that patent.
Yeah. Way to go. That's just another reason to like Linux, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that patent is so old, it's a wonder it can even be enforced.
Oh, the way they've manipulated the patent laws? What, are you kidding me?
No, but I guess I am. all right, I had another one, just a little bit here that, and this is only because I play this game and I like it, and it almost gives me motion sickness, but that Super Tux Cart, they've added some new tracks and characters and game modes, so that was released, I think, earlier this week, or at least after our last recording. I think it was over the weekend, the Thanksgiving weekend, so that's kind of cool. I'm going to give it a try. There was another one that I noticed, and this is out on the Register, that the British IT site that I get a kick out of because they turn their headlines into a very funny comment. This one is Beijing leans on Microsoft to maintain Windows XP support. So apparently the Chinese government, they're saying in order to boost their anti-piracy efforts, they are wanting Microsoft to extend the support for Windows XP. They want to head off a potentially, at least in their words there, a potentially huge security threat. Because I think Microsoft is set to sunset XP support, what, in April?
Yeah, this year.
In April of the next year.
Oh, well, 2014, yeah.
Yeah. So
This coming April,
yep. So, yeah, so apparently China is still heavily reliant on according to the Register, the prehistoric OS. Actually, Windows XP, you know, all bias aside, it was one that
It was, worked okay. It was, usable.
Yeah. But it is certainly something that they're, again, they're wanting Microsoft to do. So I guess we'll find out what happens. I'm sure for the right price, Microsoft would do it, perhaps.
I doubt it.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, right price, yeah. I mean, depending on how many people they have to hire and keep it running.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, there's that little bit of news. And then, well, there was something else, too, that I found kind of interesting. Now, it's not directly open source software, but there is probably an indirect link. And that's that they did a survey of young adult readers. And I'm guessing young adult readers are probably in the, 18 to 24 range. And they
old?
Yeah, 16 to 24. Yeah. I'm sorry. There we go. Young adult. Yeah, they're known as the super connected generation, according to this article in The Guardian, which is a British newspaper. But they indicate that there's a majority of them prefer printed books to e-books. And I thought that was kind of interesting because they're just the uber connected generation, and you'd think that they'd want everything on there, but like myself, I bought 4 ebooks and I just was less than fully satisfied with the experience of reading ebooks because with a physical book, you can use it as a door stopper. You can, you can actually read it if you want. You can just do a number of things with it that you just can't do with an ebook. Lend it to friends.
You can lend ebooks now.
Depending on what you're using. Yeah.
Yeah, but they know that you've lent it. It's a tracking thing.
There's a lot of there's ebooks out there that are DRM free also. Just they're not mainstream.
Well, and here's the thing: the two big reasons for preferring printed was value for money and an emotional connection to physical books. The top rated reasons for preferring physical to digital were: I just like to hold the product. I'm not restricted to a particular device. I can easily share it. And I like the packaging. I mean, the fact that you have that capability, I do like print. So I thought it was just an interesting
What I like about a physical book is, especially with a technical book, I can write in it.
Yes. Yep. And you can flip through it. You can flip through an ebook, but it's just not the same.
Right.
So I predict that someday we'll have physical books, but they're going to be little screens. The technology will be so cheap that you'll be able to do books like that, and you'll be able to plug them into this frame that's a physical frame, and you'll be able to read it like that. It will record you can be able to write in there, and you'll be able to save it. Then you can unplug that book and plug in another one into this little...
There are e-readers that allow you to make notes throughout it, the book as you're reading.
So they're mad, I guess.
Right now, it is available.
Yeah, okay. Like in the margins, like writing in the margins in a regular book.
Yeah, and you can highlight paragraphs or sentences or words or whatever as you're going.
And then they're indexed so you can search for them, I think.
I think it's Kindle that allows you to do it.
They're Amazon Kindle.
Right.
All right, well, anyway, enough of that. Back to, I think, actually, that's my last news item, but I have...
A KDE corner?
I do. I've got a couple of things here.
Does Tony have any news before you?
I have.
I'm sorry, Tony.
I have one article I found, but it's more of kind of like a toolbox instead. So I propose I'll wait for the toolbox section.
All right. Okay, good. Well, then I guess I do get to do my KDE corner. I have 3 items for the KDE corner this week. The KDE release candidate 4.12 has been released and is actually in Kubuntu. That was published this week, so I've got a link to that in the show notes. And then also, I used to run Project Neon, which are the daily builds for KDE, and they are retiring the support for 13.04 and are adding the support for, or at least I think they've got upcoming 14.04. And then, let's see here, support for Kubuntu 13.04 is going to be discontinued. Anyway, the point is Project Neon is alive and well, and if you want to get the latest daily builds, you can do that. And I think that's more in Kubuntu than in just flat out KDE. Right. So anybody who runs Kubuntu can do that.
And that makes sense that they only support the latest version, because if you're running cutting edge, bleeding edge of KDE, why wouldn't you be running the rest of the distro that way too?
Yeah. And I would log into there and find that my processor ran too hot, and then I'd get out. But the other thing I want to mention is, as part of the 4.12 release, there are going to be some improvements to Dolphin. Now, I mean, I'm a big fan of Dolphin. Matt, I think you like Dolphin too.
Yes.
Some of these improvements include improvements to the tree view, including the fixing some Samba share bug that was in there. Now, I don't use Samba right now, but those of you who do and experience that, the good news is it's going to be fixed in that next release. They also have reduced, and this is important to people who run lower, well, I don't want to say underpowered, but lower speed laptops, reduced memory consumption. Now, the degree of reduction really depends on the number of files in the current folder, the view mode you use, and a few other factors. But for larger folders, they're saying that in this new release, it's not going to be uncommon to see a 30% reduction in memory consumption.
Really?
Yeah. So. And there was a little flare, drum flare for that announcement. That was funny, Tony. That was very funny. All right. And then they're going to start preparations for porting to the KDE frameworks. Apparently, I was unaware of this. There are no KDE frameworks port of Dolphin yet. Now, the KDE frameworks, I think, are the libraries and all that stuff for KDE. And I'm not quite sure how that all,
so
what that
so
all
means.
So
they're working on modularizing it more?
Yeah, I guess porting it. Porting it so that they can port it into the KDE frameworks, from what I could tell. Now, I'm going to have a link to all this so you can really dive into it and get the additional information. And then also, the final thing that I noted here as far as some of the improvements, there is one concerning the move to trash and delete actions in the context menu. So they've, again, this release has got a ton of new improvements for Dolphin. So I'm looking forward to it. So, and that, gentlemen, is the KDE Corner.
Very
for this
cool.
week.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Tools from the toolbox.
It's called, it's a website that explains the shell breakdown of Linux commands and line arguments for you. It's very cool.
Are you going to post that in the, why don't you post that in the chat? Or do you want to talk about it first?
No, I will as soon as I get the... Rightly.
I know how difficult it is to try to talk and then do keyboard work at the same time, so that's why I'm talking now, so you can do the keyboard link.
All right, so it's called the Explain Shell.
Oh.
And what you do is you paste in a full command with the arguments and everything that you would paste in. So they have a few examples that they put in there, like an IP tables command. Mm-hmm. And it goes through and it takes every argument that you put in there and explains what each one does.
I just clicked on one of the examples.
Yeah, and so it says IP tables, and then grabs info from the man page and says, it's an administration tool for IPv4, packet filtering and NAT.
Yeah.
And then there's the A.
Message for you, Bob.
Thank you, Matt.
Back at you, Tony.
sorry about that.
Okay, continue.
But it's pretty cool. It goes through each of the items that are options that you put in there. It's like A is for append, I is for interface, S is for the source, and J is to jump.
The reason we got that is because I had to log into my work email, and I have that sound set to play so it alerts me when I get an email, which alerts me when someone's replied to a ticket at work. Because I'm not usually in my mail client.
Are you saying you're not paying attention to the show, Matt?
Yeah, how is that related to the show?
Because I have this one-liner that I wrote last night.
Oh, and you're checking to see
I'm going to try and paste it into your thing.
Oh,
and see how it explains it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's how it relates to the show, Tony.
Very cool.
All right.
And what's also cool
that's
is that
a four-liner.
Grab the full URL.
No, it's wrapped.
Oh, okay.
You can grab the full URL and paste it in and then send that to somebody. And it explains the whole command that you typed out.
Explain.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
You got a novel there.
pipelines.
Can you paste that in? Is that okay for?
Yeah. Is it sensitive?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. So, well, wait. It's got a.
It's got some specific references to names and things.
It's
in
got a specific reference to someone's specific log file.
Oh.
So no, I can't. Sorry.
Can you just remove the, make that anonymized and stick that in the?
No, because it's in the command, which I can't now edit.
Oh, and if, paste it back in where you say explain, and then edit it there.
But it's not going to work then, I don't think, will it?
Oh, well, if the, yeah, but do you have access to the log file right now?
Oh, yeah, I'll change it to like Woogie Boogie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I ran across that, and I thought it was very cool.
How are things in Woogie Boogie Stan?
Things are pretty good in Woogie Boogie Stan. My 15 awk statements later.
Hey, speaking of that, I was on a call with a customer, and this is the same customer I talked about last week that's running 90 Linux servers.
It's running what?
90 Linux servers. You ever heard of it?
Yeah. It's running 90, what?
90 Linux servers.
Okay.
And one of the customer contacts, now he works in the law library, but he's got a degree in computer science. He's got a law degree. This guy is very, well... He seems very intelligent.
The one guy at our company.
Very smart.
He's our I don't know what he is.
Counsel? Legal counsel?
He kind of acts as our legal counsel. He's a lawyer and he's a tech guy and he's all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
So he was talking, this guy was talking about regular expressions, you know, regex.
Yeah.
And because they're going to be loading some stuff into a into our product, but they're loading it directly from an NTFS share, you know, on their network. So there's not going to be a lot of metadata available, but they've built their file name around various various formats so that, or standardization, so that maybe so many characters in it starts something, blah, 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 and that type of thing. So he was talking about using regex to parse out the various pieces of that, which then you could then load into a table for fields, and then you end up with all this usable metadata that can be then searched via the fields and not just via the title.
Yeah, it's incredible how powerful regex is.
I started reading up on it. It looks a little complicated, but I think half of the battle is just understanding.
Wow, this is really complicated, and I can't tell how good a job it does because my little one-liner is so complicated. It's got so many lines going everywhere.
And then you can scroll down and see it. Can you paste that into the chat?
Yep, I'll paste it into the chat.
Yeah, you've got probably, what, about a dozen and a half? Oh, at least a dozen and a half lines going every which way.
There's a couple.
Well, now, you said you've got some pipes in there, right?
Yeah, several.
What you should do then is break it out and just separate it via the pipe.
Well,
and just
can't
put each segment?
Because each one's going to pipe the output.
Oh, the output to the next thing. Okay, right. I got you.
But there's the URL.
Holy cow.
Wow. That
it
is.
Actually split it into two different
Are you going to put this in the Are you going to put this in the show notes?
I wasn't going to.
I can.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But that's
Anyway, Tony, that's a very cool. How did you find this tool? You were just
Pipelands program argument file alignment. Because I use printf and I pad one of the columns in printf to pad it so it lines up the columns right.
Okay, I'm just going to do ls. Look at mine. It's got one little line. It says list directory contents. So this must, obviously it goes back to some database.
Wow, it really broke this thing down.
Yeah.
That's a great tool, Tony.
It is.
It's very cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and that's explainshell.com. Very nice.
I've got it in the show notes now, so.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to see it.
And then below, you've got the source man page for a command, at least for me. Oh, it's very interesting. It linked me to the Ubuntu. Matt, you're not going to like this. It's going to probably put a little taint on it, Matt. But if you go to the very bottom,
It doesn't have anything at the... Oh, man page, source man pages. Yeah, and it gives me the man page for Zcat, for awk, for awk, for awk, because there's three awk statements in a row there.
Yeah.
And then it gives me the sort and the unique, and then awk and awk again.
Yeah, so that's nice, too. Then you can get additional information about that, or at least it... Maybe it's some of the same information. It's just in a little more readable or predictable format. Because, you know, man pages have that format that they tend to follow.
No, yeah, but I'm sure these are the man pages.
One explanation has 7 lines going to it. The pipelines.
Yeah.
Oh,
just an explanation
of
what a pipe is. That's funny.
Oh, man, that is it's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a couple of pipes in that command.
Yeah.
Let's see. It uses Zcat, and then it tells you the file that Zcat is using, and then it pipes to an awk command, and then it pipes to that to another awk command, and then it pipes that to another awk command, and then it pipes that to sort, which then pipes to unique-c to give me a count, which then pipes to another awk command, which then pipes to another awk command.
Wow. So what is the real life? Why did you run this?
Why did I write this? I wrote this. You'll notice that I'm parsing a transfer log.
Okay.
So I'm...
I didn't notice that.
So what I wrote this for was this gives me the number of hits to every website being served up from this client's account. And he has, I think, 4 or 5 websites in his account. So it gives me the number of hits each website got that were unique per minute for the entire day.
Oh. All right.
So like it says, this IP hit your websites 8 times in this minute. This IP hit your websites 9 times.
Wow. Huh.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All the more reason to use Tor.
I'll still get an IP, but it won't be yours.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Yeah. All right.
Very cool.
Man, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's called explainshell.com.
Mm-hmm.
Links are in the show notes. Both the link of the article I found it from,
mm-hmm.
and the website itself,
okay.
plus Matt's one-liner.
Yep.
Matt's one-liner. That's an understatement.
And because you'll notice that after where I've put in Woojee Boojee,
mm-hmm.
that's where the username would be, the client's username would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the next one would be which website mm-hmm. directory you wanted it to use. And you'll notice that that's a glob. That is the star. Because I say, use them all.
Oh, okay.
And then from there, go to the logs directory, and then go to the transfer log and this date.
Yeah, I see that. That's pretty cool.
So that way, it'll give you all of them for all the websites that one client had.
A glob? Is that like a blob?
No. It's globbing.
Oh, glob to get. Okay. Okay.
Google Linux globbing, and you'll get a good explanation.
Okay. I was thinking that, you
file
know, when
globbing.
You have... Okay.
I have heard it in referring to file globbing, you're right.
Well, I was familiar with data blob, you know, as far as the data type.
No, it's file globbing.
But, you know, I'm a database...
database junkie.
Weenie. Yeah. Databases are cool.
All right.
Man, I got... There are a few one-liners that guys have written at work that put this to total shame.
Really?
So I would like to paste some of their stuff in here.
Well, take that with you to work. That's going to be fun. All right. Okay. I guess.
All right.
Again, so, Tony, thanks for that tool tip.
Yeah. You know, for the security section, there isn't anything this week,
mm-hmm.
but I saw a couple articles I wanted to read up on. One is explanation of how the NSA breaks SSL. SSH. Or something. One of those. I can't see. I
probably
didn't read
SSL.
Up on it. So
yeah, well, actually, speaking of that, I did post, I think it was this morning early about 5 a.m. When I was writing my review, I posted a link to a story about the FBI having some malware that it can put out there on somebody's computer.
Turn on the cameras without the light.
Yes. Now, I put duct tape over my work webcam.
Did you really?
Oh, well, yeah, but I've had that there for a long time. I don't want it turned on unless I'm aware. Well, if I'm there in the morning or, you know, I will confess, I sometimes am there in my pajamas working. But it just goes to show you that you should.
And it's only a driver thing that goes through and turns that on or off, the indicating that it's being used.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree that it's easy for just a program to tell it not to turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
It's not, well.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, thanks for letting us know.
Oh, okay.
And that's.
Happy to do that.
Right. And that's in your Google Plus feed?
It's in my Google Plus feed. We should maybe put a link to it in the show notes for people who don't follow me.
Sure.
I understand why you wouldn't follow me, but we'll post it in the show notes so you got it. But it was a little disturbing to hear that, but it was not surprising.
Right. Is it alive, right?
No. Is it alive is dead this week. It was actually in a coma. But it should. I actually was going to try to put one together, but I didn't have time. It would have been another twist, so we'll save that for next week.
All right.
All right, so I guess we're on to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140. We had quite a bit of back and forth with a few people.
There was actually only two people and one comment on the website. But it's a whole ton of email because those two people had several emails.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, yeah,
so
there was a very robust exchange.
So,
all right, one thing was, one of them was Brad Alexander.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He said, where's the link? I forgot to put in that link for his friend.
Yep. I don't even have that one included.
Right.
For his book or the research link or the link to the, Kickstarter, Indiegogo?
Yeah, so he can research his next book.
Yeah, so you did put it in there, right?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
I went in a few days later after the post and put it in.
Good.
He says, Brad says, just for the record, Linux has had container technology for years. Before mm-hmm. LXC, there was OpenVZ and Linux vServer, and mm-hmm. I'm still running OpenVZ at home because the cost of a container in machine resources is so much less than a proper VM like KVM or VMware.
Or VirtualBox.
True. And then he mentions an interview on Tilts that another regular listener to our show, Scott, did. Where he talked about containers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, lo and behold, Scott also emailed us.
And he not only emailed us, he emailed us several times, but
yes.
He included, did you get a chance to see that one of his last emails?
I did not watch the videos, though.
I started watching, I had to stop because you have to really pay attention visually, and I was trying to get my review done, so I had to pause it. So I was sitting at pause at home, and I'm gonna take up where I left off, but he's got a very nice set of, at least his first one so far, very nice discussion about Linux containers, which, you know, I have to admit I was not aware of. And when I found out about FreeBSD jails, I just thought, wow, this is cool. And then PCBSD has a graphical front end form called Warden, which allows you to manage these jails. And then I fire up an instance of Firefox from the jail and I'm using it. I mean, it's very cool, but it looks like Linux has got some similar capabilities.
Correct.
And I think what I may do is maybe a review of, get one going and, give it a try. I think I tried, kind of on the fly and was not successful.
I thought you reviewed OpenVZ at one point.
No. I would have remembered that. Because it's different enough. I mean, is that a distro that uses it or is that just the name of the program?
I think it's a distribution.
The virtualization container program itself that you install. Well, I'll do some checking. I think it certainly warrants a further look, although I have to say when someone like Scott goes into the detail that he goes into and has all that knowledge, my stuff is just going to be pretty pale by comparison, so I may not even do it on second thought.
Yeah, but he uses it at work, so.
Or I could do it from like the everyday user perspective just to share my experience with it. That may have some value. Because I don't know about you, Matt, but sometimes, I don't know if you've ever tried to follow some instructions once, and the instructions, or at least the person that is who's conveying the instructions, it's successful for them, but you try it, and it's not successful for you. I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but it's happened to me.
Yes.
Every once in a while it happens, so.
But usually I can figure out where I screwed it up and then make it successful.
Yeah, no, and I've been able to do that a few times, but sometimes I don't, and I don't have time to try to figure it out. So I just say, well, chalk that one up. So.
All right,
how we doing, Tony?
Very cool. We're back online, although the video is not running right now, but
I know. Great. I can take my hat off now and show my hat here. No, just kidding. So what we're kind of, what else we
anyway,
got going?
So my email's coming up now and I can see the email from Xander. He says that a few shows ago we talked about whether to keep on using those sound bites or not. I was debating about the ease of editing. And he suggested to go ahead and use a soundboard, kind of like some of the other podcasts use, so that it pipes right in and I don't have to go through and then stick it in later. I'm going to work on getting something like that working.
Oh, is that like a software thing? Or
yeah.
Okay, you have another laptop, you just...
Well, or I can play it right from mine or whatever. Yeah, okay. I have a netbook I could play it from.
Okay.
And it's basically I have five running, and then I just hit like one to play one of them, hit two to play the next, however you want to do it.
Great idea.
Yeah. So I think that's what we're going to move toward.
Okay.
I just have to go through and update it and make sure, because I tried using it a while ago. But we had so many other things, getting used to running the show and stuff, we had abandoned that for a while. But now I think we're going to get back to using that.
All right. Good.
All right.
What other, let's see, we talked about Scott's.
We had a ping back.
We talked about.
On.
We did. I want to say it was
Mandriva's.
On.
Yes.
Open Mandriva when we talked about it.
Yeah. Correct. Mm-hmm. It was. Says. This week's review is one of the granddaddies of Linux distros, the venerable Slackware. If I'm going to wear a shirt, wait a minute, that's Mary's review. That's not the pingback.
I thought, well, that sounds a little familiar.
No, the pingback.
The pingback's at the bottom, which I have to scroll down to get to, right?
It's toward the top.
Is it towards the top?
No, the pingback, it's in the email. It's not.
I couldn't read it. It's because it has a bunch of ampersands and stuff in it, meaning it has HTML, which does not work in my email.
Because it's plain text for me. No, Matt, it's above what you saw. It's above that. It's two lines up from what you had. And that go to your email.
What?
Press
go to your
the button.
Email. Go two lines up from those ampersands. It says right. URL.
Yeah.
LinuxQuestions.org/questions/.
Oh, that's where you can see it.
-1-Mandriva+-A-May-Questions-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. That's where they talked about us.
Ah, very good. Thank you very much, Tony.
All right.
It says,
Tony, thank you.
From Frank Bell, Guru. Ooh, he has Guru status on Linux Questions. He says, I heard on this week's SMLR that there's a fork called Open Mandriva, which has just given forth with a release. Because I guess someone was asking a question that pertained to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you go to the very top, they're like, is Mandriva dead?
No, it's so kind of been reincarnated in a new life.
So. All right.
So that's good. It's good for the Mandriva project.
In an inadvertent way, in a secondhand way, we help someone out on Linux Questions.
Yeah.
Because a listener, Frank Bell there, with Guru status, was able to answer a question because of us. Very good.
Yeah. We had another one, another email from Brad saying that good for you for finally braving Slackware, Mary.
Oh, yeah. I was so embarrassed that guy responded saying it was easier than I expected. So I was happy to do it.
I tried to tell you that. You thought I was trolling you.
I did. Well, Matt, I know you. I've worked with you long enough. Did he, or somebody was suggesting I should do Debian. Now, I've installed Debian. I had wireless network problems, not too surprisingly, but, I could do a Debian.
It may have been that Broadcom chip problem.
It could have been.
But
that's why I'm going to get that other desktop.
Brad was comparing Slackware and Debian, where they came out a day short of a month of each other.
Oh, okay.
Where Slackware is release was the 17th of July of 93, mm-hmm. and Debian's was the 16th of August of 93.
Mm, okay. So, yeah.
And then you guys talked about a little bit about containers mm-hmm. with Scott Dowdle, right?
Yeah, we talked about that already.
And what I thought was interesting is on Monday, Brad emailed us, said, there was somebody on Tilts.
Yeah, he's,
that was talking about.
He said it was Scott.
Yeah, and then he went through in the next paragraph down. He said he went through and found that it was Scott. And then Scott emailed us the same day saying that he was on.
Tilts. Right.
So that was cool.
Yeah, very good.
Scott also emailed us about X2Go, where. We were talking about running X2Go opposed to running Gnome Machine. And he says, it really isn't that hard to run two different desktops on one machine. So run Cinnamon or whatever your graphical user, the 3D graphics mm-hmm. on your main. And then whenever you're going to remote in, just use LXDE or something or XFCE.
Right.
So, okay.
I'm like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. Right. And then also we got something from Lauren S.
Spam.
That was spam, but it was at least targeted spam.
Yeah. I had to read it. And I'm thinking to myself, because they're getting better at that kind of stuff.
Right.
You want to read the spam of the week?
Yes.
All right.
Spam of the week. I noticed that it's hard to find your blog in Google. I found it on the 21st spot, except she says 21st.
Right.
You should get some quality backlinks to rank it in Google and increase traffic. Ooh, backlinks. Ooh. And all the time at work, we have people sending us requests. Please take this link down from this site. It is not, we did not authorize this link.
But as soon as I saw the word blog in there, where they're referring to us as a blog.
Well, that is a blog.
Yeah.
Well, but we're a podcast who happens to post show notes.
Yeah.
See, so that's how you could tell that. But exactly. At first I started reading it and I thought, and then so anyway, but that's our spam of the week.
Yeah.
We don't get that much anymore.
No, Tony does a nice job of filtering that stuff out.
Are you filtering that out?
Yeah, we as AzCommit.
Yeah.
That goes through.
Okay.
Because AzCommit did flag this as probable spam. That's why it says AzCommit spam on it.
Right. Yeah. But then I also have a new, the company that I go through for our hosting, they took over the spam filtering rules.
Oh.
So they're improving it where I couldn't figure it out.
Okay, good. Because we still get some of those new users, which you can't really stop.
I actually figured out how to stop that, and I have.
Really?
Yeah, I had to go into the code of WordPress and comment out a line, and then I think it was Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We just won't get the new user registration. We'll get other emails from the site.
Okay.
At least that's what's happening.
Yeah, because we have 30 pages of users, and I started going in there, and all the ones.
We eliminated the new users signing up by the captchas. Didn't we enable a captcha?
Yeah, we enabled captcha before, but it. It was still spam users who were still getting signed up somehow. People manually doing it.
In Poland.
Scripts doing it.
No, they have those whole armies of people in China. That's all they do all day long.
Right. And the capture, all it does is make sure it's humans doing it.
Right.
It doesn't actually make sure that it's a valid person.
So anyway, but that's I go in there and some of those ones that are clearly spam users, I delete them. So I think I deleted the admin user too, Tony.
No, you didn't.
Check.
I don't know. It doesn't matter because I'm admin.
Yeah,
I never
log
in as admin. So.
So, but I know you could fix it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think our website or
I think our internet connection
dropped again.
Dropped again. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap up the show and.
Featured music of the week.
All right. So the song, which I can't play right now. Because no internet connection. Actually, it may be cached.
Oh, okay.
It's called Fairweather Friends. Fairweather Friends Until the End by All Systems Go.
All right.
So we've gotten to the end of the show.
We've stumbled to the end of the show.
Limped in.
Limped in with internet problems.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. You know what? It's the something with the modem, or the cable modem.
Is it like resetting or something?
It looks like it. It's dropping the connection to the wireless bridge.
Okay.
You know what happens at work at home sometimes is my modem loses the ability to resolve names.
Mm. Oh yeah.
So what I do is I'll just open up, and because I run Linux, it's easy for me. I open my resolve.conf file.
Because I run Linux.
I don't know how easy it is for the other people in the house, but I just open my resolve.conf file, add the Google name servers, close it back up, and I'm good to go.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It's actually, you don't even have to do it online. There's a, in Network Manager, go through and reset it.
Well, I just dropped the command. Yeah, I dropped it a command line and... Mm-hmm. Open my resolve.conf and add those two lines.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to wrap up now.
Yeah.
I have to go.
So you're listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 113.
Pee-pee.
Papa.
For, it stands for, we didn't say it at the beginning, but Pooping Penguin. Mary brought this toy, and it's a wind-up penguin that will walk across your desk and poop out candy.
That's right.
it's got the Linux angle there with the penguin.
Yeah.
So, but I love the tuft of hair at the top.
Yeah, the little mohawk.
Yeah. All right.
All right, so this is Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.